supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, I bet a lot of you have holiday plants around the house, and you have no clue as to what to do with them now, do you? Well, we're going to help those of you who got hellebores, the Christmas rose, perennialize them into your garden. Otherwise, it's a fabulous phone call show, cats and kittens. That's our resolution for this year. So we're taking that heap and helping at 1-888-346-9499. Hank, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you?
I'm good today, Hank. How are you, sir?
Good.
And where is Hank good?
I am good in Northeast Philadelphia and Lake Harmony.
Where's Lake Harmony?
2 hours north of Philadelphia in the Poconos.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good. And what can we do for Hank in the northeast of Philadelphia?
All righty then. We just bought two, 3 weeks ago, a potted baby blue spruce. Looks all healthy. My wife and I thought that, gee, wouldn't it be fun to bring this indoors for Christmas and use it as our Christmas tree? It's, yeah, you know, 2 feet high, 3 feet high, whatever it is. And then later on, according to you, plant it up in the Poconos.
Okay. Is it in the house now?
It currently is, yes.
How many days has it been in the house?
A couple, maybe three.
A couple, maybe three.
Yeah.
The basic answer, and by the way, that is, is it a blue spruce?
Yes.
That's my favorite Christmas tree, even though over the years when we've had them as Christmas trees, which is most of my life, they rip your hands apart.
Yes, no kidding.
There's just nothing that has that form or that gleam. I mean, I firmly believe that it's because every year people want me to do, oh, what's the best Christmas tree? What's this? What's that? And I said, the Christmas tree you want is the one you grew up with.
Right.
It's the one that was in your house when you were 8 years old and you got a bike under it or something.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Okay. So the first thing we want to do is keep it away from all sources of heat. It wants to be in the coolest room of the house.
Okay.
Okay? For instance, if you had a live Christmas tree.
Yeah.
One of these bald and burlap suckers that weighs a couple hundred pounds.
Right.
The ideal situation, honestly, is to decorate it outside.
Right, okay.
Second best is to lug the thing in like Christmas Eve, put it in a big wash tub, fill that tub with cold water and ice cubes, and then have the hole pre-dug outside and get it in the ground quickly after Christmas. Because what happens is these trees will begin to regrow. They will think it is summertime again.
Gotcha, okay.
And although the blue spruce is very hardy, it can't go from summer to winter instant.
So I can't keep this in for 2 weeks and expect it to be just fine, you know, and take it back outdoors again.
Here's what you can do. First of all, make sure the room it's in is as cool as possible. I mean, even just turning the thermostat down at night.
Okay.
But keep it cool. You're probably going to see new growth on it.
Ah.
Keep it watered, but don't overwater it. You know,
well, now look, is it easier to just take it back out and leave it alone until we plant it?
That would be ideal. What I would suggest is for every day it's been inside, spend that number of days gradually acclimating it to the outside. If you don't have any of these in-between areas, a cheap and sleazy trick you can try, which is my favorite type of gardening, is you can put it outside during the day when it's a nice day. And bring it into an in-between area at night. Do that for 3 or 4 days. And then on a nice day, just dig a hole outside. All you have to do is dig a hole and drop the pot down into the hole.
You mean like now in Philadelphia?
Even now in Philadelphia.
Oh,
it will not survive above ground with the roots exposed. But if you get the roots below the soil line, and you've acclimated it. You've reverse hardened it off, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Then it will be fine as long as those roots are below the soil line. So you want to dig a hole that's as big as the pot, and you don't have to take it out of the pot. This will keep it nice and easy.
Right.
Drop it, pot and all, into the hole, fill in around it, and then just leave it alone. And then in the springtime, when you're going to go back up there and open things up, open the house up, yada yada, then take it up and plant it in its permanent location.
Okay, so spring is the ideal time to do it.
Right.
Gotcha.
You know, if you were going to take it up to Lake Harmony now, I'd say the same thing. Drop the pot in the ground and let's, you know, do this thing for real in the spring.
Gotcha. Okay.
Now,
okay.
It's going to be in an area that gets full sun on all sides, or else the needles will start to brown out on the bottom.
Ah.
And it can't be too close to a structure. You need to plan for not only the final height of the tree, but the width. Now, blue spruces grow very slowly, but they grow wide. They have very wide skirts.
You're talking now about when I really plant it. Don't put it next to the house, right?
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
And in an area that drains well.
Got it. Drains well. All right.
And make sure you're around to keep it well watered afterwards because, you know, planting in the spring, you have to make sure that it doesn't dry out.
If I forget anything, I'll call you back in a couple of months.
Well, not only that, Hank, but if you forget anything, go to our website.
Okay.
Go to Garden Answers A to Z. And read how to care for a truly live Christmas tree, because this is the same thing.
Oh, okay.
And Tree Planting 101. They'll both hold your hand.
Gotcha.
All right, man?
Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Cecily, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Cecily. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
And where is Cecily fine?
Oh, I was so glad to hear you say that. I'm fine in Centerville, Maryland.
And that seems familiar. Is that in the D.C. area?
No, it's not. You're thinking of the Virginia one. I'm on the Eastern Shore.
What can we do for Cecily on the Eastern Shore?
Well, I originally contacted you on the subject of red clover because the subject of red clover brought me to think that crimson clover is a perennial. But what I really, really wanted to talk to you about was winter gardening.
Oh, well, let me take you back to clover first.
Okay.
Because I do recall now, we had a guy who wanted to plant clover to feed
exactly.
the deer.
It was all about deer.
Of all things. And
yeah.
I had done some research years and years ago and could not remember which clovers were annual and which were perennial. I have a feeling I got them completely backwards.
You didn't get them backwards. In fact, I live in an area which is absolutely overrun with deer. And I have surrounded my house with rough meadow, and most of it is in clover and alfalfa. And that attracts the deer, and it's in the ordinary clover and white clover, pink clover. But when you were talking about crimson clover, that's a completely different creature.
Right. That's
and so you want to just cancel that out of the mix.
Well, and let me see if I finally got it right. Red clover is an annual. White clover is perennial. And as you say, crimson clover is just weird.
Well, no. Crimson clover is an annual crop.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. For deer, put in, if that gentleman wants to attract deer to his acres, he should put in mixtures of clover and alfalfa, and he can't do wrong.
Okay. And then you said you wanted to offer a suggestion.
Oh, I wanted you to talk about winter strategies of planting, because I love to garden in winter. Here it's so hot on the Eastern Shore that we have sort of burnout. You know, in July, it's terribly, terribly hot. But I have found a wonderful, wonderful new life in gardening over the wintertime with what I think gets called frost cover, but I call garden fleece.
Oh, okay. Row covers.
Yeah,
and,
row cover.
And they come in different weights, very lightweight for a normal spring and a normal fall. And then a heavyweight that can keep a lot of crops like broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and especially spinach alive over the wintertime in a climate like yours.
I do just that. But I use bamboo hoops, and I put some deer fence over those bamboo hoops to reinforce them.
Oh, okay.
And I also have some very active woodchucks who have tried to chew their way into this thing, and they are somewhat deflected by the deer fence.
Oh, now that's something I can't even imagine. You're keeping groundhogs away with this stuff. You're in the PhD class. Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, for many of us, there's no reason that you have to stop growing over winter. You just need something like a cold frame or a little hoop house or these row covers. And I think people would be shocked at how much they can extend the season, especially in a mild area near the water like you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Cecily.
You're welcome.
You enjoy your salad this evening.
Thank you very much.
You take care.
And thank you for your program.
Oh, thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind our listeners with truly live, bald, and burlap trees that they should be moved to an in-between area to harden off for a few days, then planted in the ground as soon as possible. Remove and discard all the wrappings and plant in a sunny spot with enough room to allow for the final mature height and width of the tree. But don't go looking for all the tree planting details at the A to Z section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and how to turn a one-time Christmas rose into a long-time spring-blooming garden plant. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 70 new varieties for the 2014 growing season, including Steakhouse, a 3-pound-plus steakhouse tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, hellebores, the Christmas rose, has joined the roster of plants you often gift to people blooming for the holidays. But what are you supposed to do with these things once the holidays are over? We'll tell you specifically what to do with your Christmas rose to enjoy it years and years and years in the future. But first, lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Elle, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Elle. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm here on Beaver Island, Michigan.
Beaver Island, Michigan.
Is it
a true island?
Yes, it is. It's in Lake Michigan.
It's in Lake Michigan, and it's an island. Wow. you got to be tough to overwinter on that island, don't you?
Well, you know, we don't have any more severe weather than the mainland, and sometimes the snows just go right over us and go to the mainland.
How are you connected to the mainland?
By boat or by plane?
Oh, man. So you're out of luck. It's not like a...
Well, yeah. The boat just made its last run, so we're dependent on planes from now on until spring.
Oh, right, because that's going to ice over.
Yes.
You're tough. What can we do for L, who now is on Beaver Island for the winter time?
We have been using leaves shredded for mulch and for our compost. But recently we had a couple of different gardeners tell us that since we have a huge proportion of oak leaves, that we shouldn't be doing that because they're too acidic. And I'm wondering, is that true?
Oak leaves are more acidic than the leaves of some other plants. They're also much more leathery. It's a little bit more work to shred up an oak leaf efficiently than it is the other leaves. And you are shredding your leaves, right?
Yes.
Okay. You say you're making compost with them.
Yes.
And
mulch.
And mulch. And what are you mulching?
Vegetable garden, flower garden.
And have you seen any negative effects?
Not so far, but we've only been doing this 3 or 4 years, so I don't know the long-term effect.
I have found that when there is a pH imbalance, it shows up right away. I can tell you right away they're wrong about the compost. They're just dead wrong.
Okay.
One of the miraculous things that happens is when you combine the right ingredients, say lots of shredded leaves with lots of fresh horse manure or lots of well-shredded leaves with lots of spent coffee grounds, you're dealing with acidity on one end, alkalinity on the other, all these different nutrients. In the end, the composting process not only brings things to neutral, but one of the most amazing studies I read when I was the editor of Organic Gardening magazine back in the 90s is that the more compost that has been applied to soil over the years, the less pH matters.
Okay. We have very sandy soil.
So it is very important for you to add as much organic matter to that sand as possible. Also, because you have sandy soil, that's another attribute that's going to make the pH less important. It becomes more important in clay soil because clay holds everything so much, whereby your sandy soil is always draining well, and really all you need to do is keep adding organic matter to it. Now, I would always, if I only had oak leaves, if I had a big pile of, quote, dedicated oak leaves, and I shredded those up, obviously I would first use those to mulch my azaleas, rhododendrons, blueberries, all the acid-loving plants. But if I had a mixture of leaves that only had some oak leaves in it and had a nice selection of other leaves, I would not hesitate to use that as a weed-suppressing mulch around my tomatoes, peppers, squash, and I would expect to see no problems whatsoever, especially with good drainage and lots of organic matter.
Well, that sounds good.
And you've seen yourself, Elle. I mean, you're achieving success. I mean, that's one of the prime rules of gardening. If it's working, stop listening to other people.
Okay.
They're just jealous. All right. Well, what a pleasure to talk to you. I can't get the image of you on this island surrounded by a lake of ice around you. Enjoy your winter time. I have a feeling if you live there, you must.
It's nice. It's pretty.
Oh, I imagine it's spectacular views. All right. Well, thank you so much, Elle. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Jerry, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing good, Jer. How are you, sir?
Just fine.
Where is Jerry Fine?
Cameron City, Indiana.
And where is that in Indiana, sir?
It's about 50 miles east of Indianapolis.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Jerry in Indiana?
Right behind my house, I have an old canal that runs through here.
Really?
In the springtime is the only time that it's really got a lot of water in it. But it's moist all summer, usually.
Yeah.
And I was looking for what type of water-tolerant grasses that I could put down there.
In the canal itself?
Or beside it, just to brighten up the place around there.
Okay. How deep is the canal?
I'm guessing 2.5-3 feet.
Okay.
But in the spring, it will overflow in my yard.
Aha! Okay. Very good. Very good. And how wide is the canal?
It's probably 8 feet.
Oh, so it's wide.
Yeah.
And Jerry, was this a functioning canal? Is this something that maybe barges?
It was back when, but it hasn't been functioning for years now.
Were mules used to pull barges?
Yeah.
And so, but they've obviously closed the floodgates somewhere. They've changed.
Yes, years ago.
They've changed the water flow. And this may seem like a stupid question, but are you allowed to mess with it still? Is it totally out of commission?
It's totally out.
Okay. So you have an interesting situation. You have almost a rain garden by default.
Yes.
And that's what you're kind of looking for. So you're going to need two resources. The first one is going to be at our website. You go to youbetyourgarden.org, and at the top it'll say Garden Answers A to Z. You click on that, you go to the letter R for rain garden, and that will explain this. You know, typically rain gardens are not in a canal form, but you got what you got. But it'll explain how there are plants that can take dry weather, because at the edge of the canal above on the ground level, that gets dry in the summertime.
Yes.
But these plants can also take being submerged. And there is a sequencing of plants as you get closer to the water source and further away. They really don't, you know, no plant can suck up more moisture than it could physically hold. They can't break the laws of physics. But there are plants that are very good at surviving these conditions and thriving in these conditions. And you have an opportunity to plant something that is very unique. Are you just going to do your side, or are you going to do the other side as well?
Hopefully I'd like to do the other side as well.
So what I want you to do when you're really figuring exactly what kind of plants you're going to put where, that's where I want you to contact the Indiana State Extension Service. Start with your local office and tell them you're building a rain garden / canal, and you want their list of rain garden plants for your area.
I'd just like to have a nice water garden out there.
I think you will, and you're doing exactly the right thing by putting a lot of thought into which plants ahead of time.
And I want to do it right.
It's going to be spectacular. A lot of these plants are beautiful bloomers, attract a lot of wildlife. I think you're going to do great.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right. You take care, sir.
Really enjoy your show.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Janet, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, thank you, Janet. How are you?
I'm just fine, thanks. How are you doing today?
I am all right. Where is Janet just fine?
In Havertown, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
Yes.
What can we do for Janet in Havertown?
I was listening to your show a week or so ago, and there was a woman on who was asking you how best to cut back her miles of ivy. And she went on to say how she had spent 2 to 3 hours every day, I think, cutting back and trimming this ivy and wanted some suggestions from you.
Right.
And there was a big light bulb over my head that said, use your hedge clipper because it will trim it neatly. It will get through the woody stems of the ivy, and you'll be done in a lot less than those 2 to 3 hours a day.
Huh.
Your electric hedge clipper. Let me clarify.
That's what I was just going to ask. Were you talking about the chop chop, or were you talking about that crazy thing with the with the blades that slice back and forth?
The crazy thing with the blades that has a wire coming out of the back, unless you're lucky enough to have a battery-operated one, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the nice thing about the battery-operated ones compared to the plug-in ones, I found this with my weed whacker. I moved from gas to electric to rechargeable battery. The the batteries run down. So eventually you're forced to stop. Do you have ivy that you keep under control with an electric hedge clipper?
I tried cutting it by hand for years, and when the light bulb went off with the hedge clipper, and I tried that, it makes very short work of a nasty job.
And when the ivy falls to the ground, one thing that occurs to me, what's the potential for this stuff to re-root? Because a lot of ivy gets started when somebody like tosses a piece into the woods or throws a plant away.
And ivy is very opportunistic.
Yeah, I've seen these crime scenes, and you can see how it sent out these feelers and kind of reestablished itself.
I have neighbors that have it growing inside their aluminum siding or their vinyl siding on their houses because they have failed to trim it as it started up the roof or the wall of their house.
That sounds very festive. Yeah. So what do you... Yeah, it's like they're already decorated for Christmas.
Yeah, right.
So what do you carefully rake up the dead remnants so that they don't spring?
Oh, I will, yeah, definitely. I mean, even if you trim it at a certain point and it's rooted beyond that point, you have to make sure that you pull it out completely or it will just restart as a child plant of the parent.
Yeah, because I'm seeing, you know, I can see the hedge clippers doing this in super fast time, but I can also see that if you just congratulate yourself for a good day's work, mop your forehead, go make an iced tea, you know, I can hear the music from Sorcerer's Apprentice as Mickey's, you know, as Mickey's chopped up broom comes back to life.
Yes, Mickey needs a broom and a rake and sometimes bend over and just give it a yank.
Now, did you plant your ivy?
Did I plant it? No, somebody else did.
Right. There's a lot of inherited ivy in America.
Yes.
And
yes.
Do you know what you have?
Exactly. It's green.
Well, you know, because that's one thing. We've talked a lot about ivy and the American Ivy Association, they have been really good sources of information for me. And their claim, or I should say one of the things they found, I shouldn't call it a claim, I think they're right, is a lot of people just use the term, generic term, English ivy, because that's what they've heard. But apparently English ivy is relatively well-behaved compared to Irish ivy, which is apparently the one that gets out of control the easiest. And some people just have ivy-like plants like Virginia creeper and stuff that they claim is ivy. But, yeah.
No, I know the difference between Virginia creeper because I've got some of that, too.
And so how long have you been using your hedge clippers on your ivy?
I would say 10 to 15 years.
And so far, so good, right?
Oh, no complaints. And, you know, when it begins to look scraggly, I know that I can get the hedge clippers out. And as I said, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, I don't have the miles that your caller has.
Right.
15 to 20 minutes from clip to sweep.
Okay. But again, my instincts were correct. After you're done with this, you got to get up all the debris.
Oh, yeah.
Or else you're going to have more ivy than you ever had before.
You will have much more ivy.
Yes.
It's definitely like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. It's a very good analogy.
Yeah, I went to Temple University, and they had the expression acres of diamonds. That's what they called the campus, and I'm thinking acres of ivy, which is not nearly as as good as diamonds.
It will take over acres if allowed.
Oh, yeah. All right, Janet, what a great suggestion. Hedge clippers for keeping kind of scurrilous ivy under control. Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Only one caveat. Don't cut the cord.
Yeah, exactly. I've run over mine with my lawnmower enough to know that.
All right, Janet.
Mike. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Enjoy your show. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank
now.
You so much. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind listeners who had a cut Christmas tree in the house to be sure and recycle that tannenbaum, but not in your compost pile. Instead, prune off entire branches and use them as springy protection for pansies and other winter plants. Or fill the entire tree with suet feeders and globs of peanut butter and stand it in the backyard to make the ultimate natural bird feeder. Or just find a recycling location that'll use it to help make an artificial reef somewhere. But don't go repurposing your pine just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fabulous phone calls and how to take a Christmas rose and turn it into a spring-blooming plant year after year after year. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Burpee supports You Bet Your Garden and offers over 70 new varieties for the 2014 growing season, including Steakhouse, a 3-pound-plus steakhouse tomato, and On Deck, a sweet corn you can grow in a container. These and more can be seen online at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll get to the question of the week. What to do with the Christmas rose you got for Christmas that you'd like to see bloom again year after year? We'll tell you exactly how to make that happen after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Jean, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Jean, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you. Thank you for helping me with my chipmunk conundrum.
Well, I haven't helped you yet. Where are you, Jean?
I'm so hopeful. I'm calling from Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Chipmunks have gone bad on you, huh?
They have. I'm a kindly gardener and a pretty peaceful person, and the chipmunks are driving me absolutely crazy. I don't mind so much if they're in my beds in the ground, but they have started to get into my pots. So the planters that I have pansies in the winter and petunias in the summer. And I'm trying to figure out how to keep those little guys out of them. They dig in and disrupt the roots and make a general mess, throwing soil all around.
And you've seen this?
I've seen it. I've seen them on the pots.
Oh, okay. Because...
And I run out and shout.
Because, yeah, they love that. This sounds more like squirrel behavior.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I was going to ask about squirrels, too. I've seen them on the bird feeders, but I've not seen them in the pot.
Oh, so it's your fault.
I doubt it.
No. You're feeding seed to the birds.
Yes.
Okay. That's encouraging both squirrels and chipmunks. And I have to be honest, if they're just regular bird feeders, if the squirrels and chipmunks scatter stuff all around,
right,
then you can also get mice and rats and voles attracted to that spillage. So
okay.
I know it's not necessarily the world's most popular position, but my feeling about birds is to feed them suet in the wintertime. When they,
okay.
You know, when their natural food is at an all-time low, have fresh water available for them all year long. Squirrels, it takes the average squirrel about 45 seconds every day to attend to all of its earthly needs. That's, you know, they have very few needs. That's, you know, that's when the squirrels brush their teeth and eat and do whatever squirrels do. The rest of their waking hours are spent trying to figure out ways to torment human beings. And the ones they love to torment are the ones who put these giant boxes full of bird seed in their front yard, because they will eat some of it, but then their instinct is to bury the rest. So
Ooh. That's
why they're digging into your pots.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, that is helpful to know, because the squirrels were next on my list of least favorite garden items. And I caught one in a trap one time with pistachios, and then I thought, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do with it now that I've caught it. So you're saying the solution is to take the bird feeders down, and I will try that.
Yes. But I love to hang a lot of suet feeders in my trees over the winter. You get chickadees, nutthatches, wrens, woodpeckers of every description. You get this fabulous diversity of birds. And these are the birds that will eat insect pests in the summertime.
That's pretty amazing. So if I make my own suet, are there things I should leave out of it? Because I've made some suet balls, and I feel like the squirrel even got on that and
You have to have them in cages. And
okay,
one thing you can do to discourage squirrels while feeding birds is hot pepper powder or hot pepper shake, and the hotter the better. It turns out, virtually all birds naturally eat hot peppers. It's one of their favorite foods, the hottest peppers. Some of the hottest peppers that are found in the tropics are actually colloquially known as bird peppers. Because birds eat the fruit. Yeah, birds got no lips, so the heat doesn't harm them. But it's a tremendous food source for them. And there's even speculation it helps keep them warm during the wintertime. So a lot of people will fill their bird feeder with hot pepper shake, and the birds will keep coming, but the squirrel will only come once.
Okay, great.
Same thing with any suet balls or any peanut butter balls you make. Roll them in hot pepper, roll them in hot pepper shake, and then while you're retraining the squirrels and chipmunks to leave your containers alone, mulch the top of the container with like an inch of hot pepper or hot pepper shake.
Okay, I'll try that.
But yes, yeah, squirrels are evil, and chipmunks serve the squirrels. Remember that, Gene.
I will. Thank you.
All right, you take care.
Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Christy, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you today?
I am doing just fine. Christy, how are you?
I'm just fine, thanks.
And where is Christy fine?
I'm actually from Sewickley, Pennsylvania.
I know where Sewickley is.
Good. Back, have you been here?
Yes, yes. Back when I was the editor of Organic Gardening Magazine, I got a call from the Sewickley Garden Club.
They're huge.
Oh, and they had headquarters in this turn-of-the-century, like, schoolhouse that they had renovated, and they flew me out to give their garden club a talk. So I know that you're right outside of Pittsburgh.
Yes, we are. Actually, we're just north and slightly west of Pittsburgh.
A beautiful area. See? I know everything.
That's wonderful. Good, because then I hope you can help me with my plant.
Well, we'll see. What can we do for Christy in Sewickley, PA?
Well, my daughter actually gifted me a beautiful bonsai gardenia, or gardenia bonsai. I'm not quite sure which direction you say that. Back in October for my birthday. I'd never had one before.
Very few people have, Christy.
I thought, wow, this is a really unusual plant. So I thought, wow, how do I take care of this? So I read the instructions, which were really pretty scant. There wasn't a lot of information with the plant about how to take care of it. So I put it in my front window, which is actually west, and with my other plants, which is what was suggested because it needed to be around other plants accordingly. And kept it moist and kept watering it like every third day, making sure the soil was moist, and I was spritzing the leaves and doing all of these things that it said to do. It bloomed like maybe one more time, and then all of a sudden the buds just like started dropping off, and maybe about 4 or 5 weeks after I had the plant, I noticed that the leaves were turning brown. And then shortly thereafter, I thought, this plant is sick. I don't know what's wrong with it. And then I noticed the webbing, and I thought, oh, no, it has mites. So I start reading online about what to do with that, and I didn't want to do anything chemically. So I was using the soap baths and trying to, you know, mitigate for that. That seemed to kind of disappear, and now all of this, like, white stuff has appeared at the joints of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
The leaves are still dropping. They're still turning brown. The buds are still dropping off. But it's still producing leaves, buds. It's still growing,
but it's not nearly as lush.
And
gardenias are known to be among the most temperamental of all house plants. To take a gardenia and put it in the bonsai miniature form kind of triples the intensity of difficulty. She's assuming that you are one of the top indoor horticulturalists in the world.
Oh, boy.
Now, I can tell you right away from that first appearance of spider mites that your house is very dry.
Yes.
Your indoor air is very dry. And don't spray any more soap on this plant. And I want to reiterate, anyone who uses insecticidal soap, whether it says so or not on the package, rinse it off a half hour later. The only thing insecticidal soap can do is smother insects it hits. So 20 minutes later, it's just soap on leaves, which is obstructing their regulation of air and water. But the interesting thing about spider mites is they can't take moist air. They are creatures that thrive in low humidity. All you needed to do, and all you need to do going forward, is to get a little spritz bottle filled with plain, clean water and mist that plant down every morning.
Okay.
They love it. This is a drama queen, Christy. This is the drama queen. This is the Diana Ross. And it's bonsai Diana Ross of indoor plants, you know. Since you are in Sewickley, you are in a center of hardcore gardeners. You want to find somebody who knows something about bonsai and give them the plant. No. Have them have them walk you through it. It needs to be protected from drafts. It needs to be protected from extreme temperature changes. It can't be near anything that gives off heat, like a radiator or a hot air vent. Loves being misted every morning. You know, the good news is she sent you a spectacular plant, a beloved plant. The bad news is your daughter sent you a plant on a score of 1 to 10, the difficulty. You know, we're in Spinal Tap. Yours is up to 11, you know. So keep misting it in the morning. Keep it away from bright light and contact a bonsai expert and have your hand held.
I will do that. Okay.
And with these bonsais, less is more. All right, good luck.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye now.
All right, as promised, it's time for our festive question of the week, turning the Christmas rose into a year-round plant. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, why don't you get us started with this week's question?
Sure, Mike, and what a festive topic. Our question this week comes from Leon, one of our many new listeners in State College, PA.
What is up with these folks in Happy Valley? What's going on? We've only been on the air there for a year, and we're getting as many emails and phone calls as we do from our Philadelphia area listeners.
I know, it's like they're trying to stage a takeover. Anyway, Leon writes that he was in a grocery store recently and purchased a specific variety of the Christmas rose he'd been looking for, the scientific name Helleborus niger. He continues, I picked up three, all of which are in full flower. I want to plant them in my garden, but it's covered in snow and ice right now. I have a feeling that flowering plants shouldn't go outside in the winter, but I don't know for sure. If I'm correct, what would be the best way to keep them healthy until I can plant them in the spring? Or should I put them outside now, maybe out of the wind, with a towel over them at night?
No, no, and no. A towel? Anyway, hellebores are among the cold-hardiest plants, and the species we call, quote, the Christmas rose really can bloom outdoors at Christmas time. At least it used to under the pre-Gregorian calendar when Christmas fell on January 6th. But that's a plant that's been nicely settled in the ground for a couple of years. And many sources suggest having a big cloche, an oversized bell-shaped plant protector on hand, if even a well-established plant blooms right before a big ice or snowstorm. And plants that have been forced, like virtually all of the blooming Christmas favorites, are already off their schedule, and they really do need extra pampering.
And since when do you know anything about hellebores?
Well, that depends on how long I've known my friend Barry Glick, who may be the biggest breeder of hellebores in the country. He typically has 300,000 of them in cultivation at his Sunshine Farms and Gardens in West Virginia. He's the ultimate ambassador for these plants, which are among the earliest of all plants to bloom, do well in the shade, and aren't touched by deer.
So does the Christmas rose bloom red?
That would make sense, wouldn't it? No, flowers are white, although they do turn a little pink when they age. Early botanists thought the plants looked like wild roses, so some hellebores acquired common names like Christmas rose and Lenten rose that combined that misconception with their bloom time. There's also a folk tale that says the Christmas name originated when a young girl shed tears because she had no gift for the baby Jesus, and a blooming hellebore popped up out of the snow.
This plant has quite a history.
We don't have time to delve into the half of it. Hellebores are extremely poisonous. That's why deer and evil squirrels won't mess with them. They've even been linked to the death of Alexander the Great, and they have a long history in witchcraft and magic. The dried flowers were used by wizards to make themselves invisible.
Back to Earth, Michael. What should this guy do?
Well, Barry was kind enough to take a short enough break from plowing all his snow to explain that the best course of action is to keep the plant indoors in a bright window until all danger of a hard freeze has passed, and then plant it outside in the spring in an area that gets dappled shade and drains well. Barry really emphasizes the drainage part. He told me, quote, "The only way I've been able to kill a hellebore is to overwater it."
So our listeners should have a light hand with the water inside as well.
Absolutely. It's always easier to revive a slightly dry plant than to bring a drowned one back from the dead. And good watering begins with getting rid of that decorative foil around the pots of holiday plants.
Speaking of which, I know you plan to give out tips about some of the other holiday plants as well, but you've had too much fun with the Christmas rose and we're running out of time. What final thoughts on those other plants can you give us in 60 seconds?
Yeah, 60 seconds. I hate when public radio people say that. Your brain just shuts down. I can't think. I knew I should have turned invisible when I had the chance.
Mike L.
Yikes, she's using my Kryptonian name. Well, basically, you can keep any holiday plant other than paper whites alive after the holidays. They're too complex to perennialize, and they're impossible to get to flower again if you force them in water and pebbles the first time, the way most people do. You'll find good info on exactly what to do with the other plants like amaryllis, poinsettias, rosemary trees, and Christmas cactus in the A to Z Answers section of our website.
That's a pretty cowardly answer.
You wouldn't say that to me if I was invisible.
Yes, I would.
Yeah, but you might not be pointing in the right direction. Well, that sure was some interesting information about the Christmas rose now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to feed me hellebore hash browns if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org.
Please, please, please tell us where you live. Please.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week has been Adam Stanishevsky. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and see what's new every day at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. A pair of Christmas roses are our editor Al Banks and Alexis Landis, who produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm Thorny Mike McGrath. And I guess I'll burn some of that copious coal I found in my stocking this year so I can stay warm enough to see you again next week. It's one of the brightest berry bearers you can grow. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll tell you how to get the best show from your fire thorn, plus your fabulous phone calls.